Well, it's wonderful to be back across the desk from conductor Andrew Kohler, who is here to talk about Saturday's concert with the Western Michigan University Symphony Orchestra and special guest Stolberg Silver medalist Sean Yu. You, me, and a pot of tea once again, Andrew. Isn't this wonderful?
It is a great pleasure. Yes, we did have a few chances to talk last year, of course, but it wasn't quite the same. It feels much more exciting to be thinking about a conversation that is inviting an audience, a live audience, to hear live musicians on stage making music in the moment. Can't wait.
This concert represents a challenge for the musicians, especially straight out of the gate. You've had since early September, perhaps, to put all of this music together. It is some of the most delicious music you could find. I love Stravinsky. I love Prokofiev. It's vibrant. It has so many moving parts. And it, when it comes off, it is thrilling.
I couldn't agree more. I love that music, too. And that's what obviously prompted me to program it, that and a few other reasons. But yes, I think that these composers, in particular the Stravinsky, these are composers who know the orchestra really well, write quite brilliantly for it, but write in unexpected ways for the orchestra. So there's so much about that music that is about the gesture of it. It's not sort of, it doesn't feel exactly like an old worn sweater that you love. You know, there's new ideas and things that, you know, all the component parts together, you know, create this mosaic picture, right? But it's a little bit like pointillism or something like that. The individual parts don't always make sense by themselves. And that can be very difficult to get across for the musicians in an orchestra, you know, because they look at their own part and they think, I don't know what to make of this. Yeah. And it's not until we have had enough chances to do it all together that you sort of see what your little piece of the puzzle is.
Does this all go back to Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov kind of creating new sounds with the orchestra through orchestration?
A big part of it is, and there's no question, the Firebird was even written in Rimsky-Korsakov's Dacha, you know. And he was, of course, famously Stravinsky's teacher, but it goes well beyond that because Stravinsky was writing this piece as a young man and in a lot of ways, I think, just imagined what could be. I mean, he went well beyond even what Rimsky-Korsakov thought of, who was already a rather imaginative fellow. So I think this Firebird quite rightly marks a real departure in the way that music was conceived. And Stravinsky really hit on some extraordinary combinations of sounds.
Well, the program actually starts with the featured concerto work, except it's not called a concerto.
Right.
I don't really know the history behind Prokofiev's Sinfonia Concertante, although there were some terrific cellists in Russia in the early 20th and mid-20th century.
Right.
Is this related?
Absolutely. And of course, the most famous of those is
Mstislav Rostropovich.
Yes, and sure enough, he is deeply, he's actually not just the dedicatee, but sort of listed as an editor on the work. So what essentially happened was that in the early 30s, Prokofiev composed a cello concerto, just more conventionally named cello concerto, and it was kind of a bit of a dud. You know, some people have speculated maybe it was a bad performance, but at any rate, he sort of withdrew the work very quickly after the first performance, and nobody made much mention of it afterwards. And then, strangely, this young whippersnapper named Rostropovich found this part and played it to great acclaim at a conservatory performance. And all of a sudden, late in life, this was late 40s by this time, Prokofiev only had about 5 years left to live, he was reawakened to his interest in the cello. And with, you know, because of Rostropovich's brilliant playing, sort of reworked the old cello concerto into this new Sinfonia Concertante. And actually, initially, he thought to himself, well, it's just another concerto. And then he revised it yet one more time. And then it finally became the Sinfonia Concertante. Nobody's really clear why he went with this new title. Sinfonia Concertante refers to a genre that was long since outdated, that came from the 18th century and was about multiple soloists. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case here. It's definitely just a cellist. But what most people speculate is that because the orchestra part is richer and has more to do than just sort of a standard accompanimental vehicle, kind of trying to stay out of the way of this lead cello soloist, but rather interacting more frequently with the cello soloist, maybe for that reason, he sort of heard it as multiple soloists at once and gave it this somewhat archaic title.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it could appeal to music directors, program directors, because they don't always want to step aside and have their orchestra just accompany. But
that's right. A little spotlight on the orchestra, too.
Yeah. 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 The soloist for Saturday, which is a free concert starting at 8 o'clock in Miller Auditorium. And right. We're in person, correct?
Yes, we are in person. Masking is required, but everyone is welcome.
That's a, 3,000-plus seat hall, so there'll be plenty of room for spacing, I'm sure.
Exactly right.
As well. And I'm sure the musicians are very excited to present this and feel the energy from a live audience once again. The soloist, as I was trying to get around to, Sean Yu, who won the Stulberg Silver Medal in this last year, which...
Right, 2021.
2021.
Yeah.
Not an in-person event. This was...
Correct.
Judged through audition...
Video submissions. Yeah, exactly. So we've not had the pleasure of actually having him in Kalamazoo just yet. This will be the first time, and another cause for excitement. Sean is a 17-year-old student at Juilliard Pre-College. He is already a laureate of multiple competitions and attends almost every summer, I think, that Perlman Music Camp, where so many of our Stulberg laureates have spent their summers as well.
Yeah.
He's a really extraordinary young cellist, and from, I can only speak from email and phone correspondence, but a really, really nice young man. And, this Prokofiev is an absolute beast of, it really does not get harder for the cello. There is nothing more technically challenging and musically taxing. It's also quite long work, clocking in at about 40 minutes. So it's a substantial work. And to imagine that there's this, a 17-year-old who can take it on is inspiring and dispiriting in equal measure somehow. But it really is quite remarkable. And, quite clearly he's proven himself ready for this challenge. And he is en route as we speak live on the air right now. And we're looking forward to having him for our dress rehearsal tonight.
Do you know if this was the piece he brought to the Stulberg competition?
It was, yeah. This is what he played in the Stulberg competition. Now, I've taken the track that I really think that historically it had always been that whatever the Stulberg soloist played in the competition was the thing that they would play with the orchestra. And I sort of found that the Stulberg winners of late are really such gifted players that really... I felt I can trust them to play. And, if they say they're ready to perform something else, I believe them. They are going to be ready to perform something else. And I wanted to be sensitive to the fact that some of these young students, there's a sort of pedagogical arc that their teachers are working on. So maybe at the point that they perform this for the competition, it's a piece that they've already played quite a lot. And they know that it's a really solid competition piece that they feel they can win with. Maybe it's something newer and they can't wait for a chance to actually put it with orchestra. So I always, like to ask and say, we could do what you did. We can look at something else. Obviously, I want to think also about the orchestra and what would be engaging for it. And in this case, Sean said the magic words, which is that it would be my dream to play this with orchestra. And I thought, all right, let's make that happen then.
Well, Sean, you will realize his dream on Saturday night at 8 o'clock in a free concert at Miller Auditorium when the Western Michigan University takes the stage with conductor Andrew Kohler. Also on the program, the Firebird Suite of the ballet by Igor Stravinsky and Icarus, a newer work from the 2000s by Lyra Auerbach. And we'll be talking about those pieces as well. It seems like any one of these movements could serve as its own concerto. Would you pick one? And we'll hear how the cello and the orchestra interact.
Let's go with the third movement, which starts with this wonderful expansive theme that's then heard in many different guises along the way. Mm-hmm. And you'll get a sense of the sheer virtuosity throughout, but especially at the very end of the work where the cellist is just in the stratosphere of his instrument.
I'm with Andrew Kohler, who's conducting a concert on Saturday at 8 p.m. in Miller Auditorium with the Western Michigan University Symphony Orchestra, featuring this work. That's the finale of the Sinfonia Concertante. Sean Yu will be the featured cello soloist. He is the silver medalist of the 2021 Stolberg International String Competition. And just in the last few seconds, he's doing something impossible. Right there. That sounded like a violin lick.
Yeah, actually, it was that very passage, the way this piece ends, that was one of the things that made me sort of connect the dots for the program idea here. This whole concert collectively is titled Taking Flight. And there's a number of levels it works on. One is, of course, we're just back concertizing again. How wonderful is that for a live audience, right? So we ourselves are taking flight again into the world of live concertizing. But then there's also, you know, Sean Yu and his career as it gets started, and also this crazy passage at the end of this piece as the it seems like the notes of the cello themselves take flight. And of course, yeah, a story of Icarus that we're about to discuss, a very famous mythological flight, and then the Firebird, which also is flight. Mm-hmm. And there's a third level, which is really interesting too, which is that all these composers are Russian composers who left Russia, at least for a significant part of their careers. In the case of Prokofiev, he, of course, famously returned and lived out his final years in the Soviet Union, but he spent almost more than a decade, I think almost two decades abroad. And Stravinsky was a real citizen of the world, right? I mean, he was already, even before the revolution, living in Paris, and then by the time of the revolution, never came back to Russia and spent time in Switzerland and eventually became an Angelino living out in L.A. And Lera Auerbach, too, was born in the last years of the Soviet Union.
1973.
Yes, exactly right. And just shy of 20 years left in the before the dissolution of the Soviet Union. And her bio is not really clear. I'm not sure if she's in America right now. I mean, I know she studied some in America and some in Germany, and I'm not sure where she calls home right now. But either way, these are all composers who have a sense of Russianness about them, but also, you know, took wing and took flight themselves through the world.
I don't know if you had a chance to notice this, but the first Bullock Series concert featured violin instructor Megan Crawford.
Megan Crawford, yes, I was there at that concert.
She played a piece by Lera Auerbach.
She sure did, and I think, I'm not sure if that was already on her radar, but she did mention to me that she was doing it and wanted to tie it a little bit to this performance, which was really generous of her and suggests, you know, a lot about what kind of a wonderful colleague she is. So yeah, I was really excited. That is as different a piece by Lera Auerbach as I can imagine from the one we're doing.
Well, she talked about it as an like anti-virtuosic piece, almost.
It was, yeah. It was all about loneliness and this very unusual kind of almost dark black humor, I would say, kind of conception. But
Russians don't know anything about that.
Yeah, right, exactly. but this piece has a real gravitas to it, this piece Icarus. And, you know, she herself admits, Auerbach, that is, that this was a title that was added after the music was written. So it is very much not a sort of one-to-one ratio where we can assume that everything we're hearing must tell some part of the story. Of course, for listeners who might be a little fuzzy on the mythology, Icarus was the son of Daedalus. Daedalus designed this famous labyrinth in Crete and was then imprisoned within his own labyrinth and figured out the way to escape was to design these wings that he could use to fly. And he gave some to his son as well, but warned him not to fly too low nor too high, too close to the sun. But the sort of dizzying joy of getting to fly caused Icarus to go too close to the sun, and the wax melted on the wings, and he plunged to his death. So it's commonly thought of as a tale of hubris, but Lera Auerbach has some really interesting things to say about it, about sort of the complete circle that is formed because Daedalus's greatest success is also his greatest failure. You know, I mean, he comes up with the most ingenious solution. He's able to grant man the ability to fly, and that same thing is what leads to the death of his son. And she's a really quite profound and interesting thinker, and I know that she, as an artist, is engaged in a number of different disciplines. I think she does some visual art, she does some choreography things. She's really all over the spectrum. She's truly just this like profoundly creative energy and presence. And I think a lot of that is audible in this piece, this Icarus, which came from a larger symphony, but is sort of the last tail end of this. And she herself excerpted into its own standalone tone poem.
It seems so perfect for this program, but how did you come across it?
Just listening, as usual. You know, I'm always trying to listen. I'm always looking for new voices. And this is just one of those pieces that grabbed me right away. And I hope it will be the same for your listeners and anyone in the audience on Saturday. There's this incredible energy at the beginning, and it, you know, by turn sort of dissolves into what clearly feels like a lament. But it's somehow modern, yet the gestures are very recognizable, I feel like. And the emotional content of the work, first and foremost, I feel comes across really beautifully. There's some wonderful effects as well. Listen at the beginning for what are called Bartok pizzicatos. That is to say, pizzicatos that are so violently executed that the string snaps back against the fingerboard, creating this percussive effect. There's lots of ponticello playing, which is where the strings play close to the bridge and create a kind of scratchy sound. And she says very clearly at the beginning of the score that all these things must be very dramatically realized. You know, don't go in for half measures. And when they're well done, they really do convey a very powerful soundscape.
Is there any danger of damaging one's instrument if you're attacking it like this?
We've not talked about it, and so far no one's complained, so I'm just going to keep on going that way.
Give it your all.
That's right.
This is one of the works for Saturday night's concert. It is free to all. Masks must be worn in Western Michigan University buildings, and this is in Miller Auditorium at 8 o'clock Saturday night. Plenty of room for spacing as well. We'll hear Icarus now in a youth symphony performance recorded at a festival. Music of Lehrer Auerbach. Music of Lehrer Auerbach. I'm with Andrew Kohler, who will conduct the work Saturday night at 8 p.m. in Miller Auditorium in a free concert with the Western Symphony. I was, you know, enthusing over the orchestration skills of Stravinsky and Prokofiev, but they don't have anything on Ms. Auerbach.
No, complete control of the orchestra. It's really, really remarkable because I think this was, I mean, she would have been, what, this was early 2000s, you know, maybe just barely 30 at the time that she wrote this, but
huge imagination.
Know. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the remarkable thing, you know, because composers at the age of Auerbach when she was doing this, or Stravinsky when he was writing Firebird, you know, they can't have had a lot of experience writing for orchestra yet. You know, you don't get that many chances to really test effects out and say, oh, that works and that doesn't. It has to be this intense sort of internal understanding of what tone color is and what sound will come out.
How to build it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There are some interesting combinations in the orchestra you'd never predict could turn into the tone or the strange sound it creates.
Absolutely, no. And there's one particular one that sticks out to me here. I mean, among the other details I've already pointed out to your listeners, those pizzicatos. I mean, that's sort of leaps out at someone. But then there's this beautiful solo fairly or about a third of the way through the piece, which involves cello in an extremely high register, solo cello in an extremely high register, doubled by flute, and then an octave, a lower octave version of the same theme in bass clarinet. That is a pairing that you that has never occurred to me and that I can think of no precedent for, but it's haunting, beautiful.
We have to move on now to the final work on the program, which is a famous work, the Firebird Suite. Began as a ballet for Ballet Russe in Paris, I believe.
Exactly right.
Stravinsky himself was one of those artists who knew his worth and many times was frustrated with how, different orchestras, different countries would just take his music and make their own versions. He wanted to have ownership. And so we have versions of orchestral suites of this music that are multiple versions over the years that he created in a way to create ownership of his music.
Yeah. And it was not just about ownership, although that was a big part of it. It was also about, I think, he lived in a time of such incredible changing tastes. So in a lot of ways, yes, this Firebird Suite from the middle aughts of, 1906, I think it was when it was premiered, it is already a very modern piece, already looking forward, but it still had a lot of the conceptual ideas and the sound world of Romanticism. And
Tchaikovsky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Even Wagner to a certain degree, although Stravinsky later in life would strongly deny that. And then, in subsequent orchestrations, like one of the ones that we're doing from 1919, by that point already, World War I behind everyone, there was a desire for a leaner sound. And so he cut down the orchestration rather significantly, what he termed unnecessarily wasteful orchestration, wanting his works to sound ever more sort of clear and what would have been understood at that time as modern. And there's a very famous, of course, tale of Stravinsky. He was like the last choice for this piece, right? Diaghilev, the guy who was the head, the impresario of Ballet Russe, went through like four different Russian composers, every one of them turning him down.
So he picked the story.
He picked the story, correct, exactly. And then each one said, oh, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know. No thanks. And then finally, just out of desperation, he was like, I don't know, here's some guy named Stravinsky who studies with Rimsky-Korsakov. Let's give him a try. Let's see what he can do with it. And boy, did he do something with it. So this is, of course, a tale of a prince who has to defeat this terrible ogre whose soul lives in an egg that he has to crack. And he does this with the magic of a firebird, the feather of a firebird. And if we hear a little bit at the beginning, we get this sort of a sense of place, the ogre's residence and all his henchmen there and this very spooky kind of thing. And then the first rustlings of the firebird are represented by what has to be one of the most ingenious strokes of orchestration ever. And that is all the strings playing the open harmonics on their string, just sliding up and down, back and forth on their strings. And I think when we get to that spot, everyone will hear it and realize that this is truly, that was maybe the one single moment that crystallized Stravinsky, the composer, has arrived.
Let's listen for that special moment in this early work of Igor Stravinsky. I'm with Andrew Kohler. The Western Michigan University Symphony will perform this work on Saturday night at 8 p.m. Details at wmich.edu/music/events. Thank you. Well, Andrew, it's more subtle than I thought. It's just that, but it's creepy.
It's absolutely creepy. It's the first fluttering of the Firebird as the prince discovers, you know, sort of off in the distance, this magical creature. I mean, it's supremely effective. It really is just a stroke of genius, I think.
And you were saying that perhaps audiences in the first, shows were kind of, what is that?
Yeah. I mean, I can think of really no equivalent. I don't know any other part in the repertoire, certainly before that, that would have used that particular effect. And Stravinsky was indeed quite proud of it in particular because, you know, of course, Rimsky-Korsakov, his teacher, had discovered many wonderful orchestral effects, but that was Stravinsky's to own.
That was all Stravinsky. Yeah. He was no prodigy. He was quite the late bloomer. I mean,
yes.
Unlike Prokofiev.
That's right. Yeah, that's absolutely the case. But however he got there, he sure got there. Maybe we can skip ahead to a very thrilling part of this, which is the Firebird sort of enchants all Katshai, the evil henchman, this ogre, and all his henchmen, and makes them dance this furious dance, which is called the Infernal Dance. And it's really one of the most thrilling parts. And it begins with this chord that invariably wakes up anybody who's been lulled to sleep by the peaceful movement that precedes it.
This is what's going to take us out of this hour. So I just thank you so much for joining me here on Classical WMUK. We get over a cup of tea and talking about music. It's wonderful to enjoy this again.
There are few greater pleasures for me. Thank you, Kara.
We'll see you again soon. And I'll remind listeners once again, this is a free concert on Saturday at 8 p.m. in Miller Auditorium. Masking required and plenty of distancing available in the hall at Miller Auditorium. We have covered the Sinfonia Concertante, which is a virtuosic cello solo piece featuring Sean Yu, the silver medalist of the Stolberg competition. He'll be in town for that. We've heard Icarus by Lara Auerbach, and now we'll finish up with this Infernal Dance from the Firebird Suite.